From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on, Hauntings with Joshua P. Warren. Here's what's happening. Former astronaut Buzz Aldrin, the second person to walk on the moon in 1969, well, he was in New Zealand right now after being evacuated from the South Pole when his medical condition deteriorated, according to a release from the National Science Foundation. Now, Buzz is 86 years old, but he wasn't feeling well. Something happened. They got him on a plane and got him to New Zealand. That's where he is right now. Is the United States ready for a full-blown war in space? Experts say that the U.S. military considers the prospect and is gearing up for a potential space warfare by developing weapons that could only exist in science fiction dreams. Our space historian and, of course, science advisor Robert Zimmerman with us. Robert, this is serious stuff, isn't it?
Well, what's happened, George, is that in the last two or three years, the military community has recognized that the satellites they put in orbit to do reconnaissance and surveillance and to observe the Earth so they can be prepared for battle, they've always treated them as pretty safe. Now, it's really very difficult to get at them and to do harm to them. And the last few years, they've realized that technology has improved with a lot of countries like China and Russia, and they're more vulnerable, and so they're a little more worried about it. And so what they're doing is they're pushing for new developments that they can put either some form of defensive systems on the satellites or to improve their own offensive capabilities so they can say to anyone who attacks our satellites, you do it to us, we can do it to you. A lot of this is overreaction. I will tell you that. Some of it's just trying to get dollars, lobbying for money, you know, build empires within the Pentagon. But there is something to be said for it because China and Russia, China especially, has got a very aggressive space program, and it's a military/civilian program. So everything they do is developing is for the developing of the military as well as doing peaceful stunts in space. And so they've been very aggressive at developing anti-sat weapons. So there's an issue here, and we have to face it.
Robert, if a country did something by taking out a satellite, would we, one, know that they did it, and two, how would we know that it was taken out as opposed to some kind of malfunction?
Well, all right, anti-satellite attacks are generally pretty obvious. The Chinese did a test a few years ago of an anti-sat, and it was very plain what they were doing. They moved the satellite, rendezvoused with another of their satellites, and blew the first one, you know, the anti-satellite blew up right next to it and destroyed the first, produced a ton of space junk. They got pillared by the rest of the world because they caused a great deal of problem. We have space junk in space, and they actually don't want to do that again. They're embarrassed by it. But you can usually track who did this.
It's not
a mystery because by international law, anything you launch into space, you've got to announce what you've launched. So we know any satellite that gets launched, who did it. And then what it does, you can track. So there would be no mystery about this. And therefore, we'd know exactly who to retaliate to.
Interesting science. Robert, thank you so much. Have you ever been on a cruise? I've been on one a long time ago. Had a good time. Had a good time. Went to Cozumel and Cancun in that area. But think of this. Two American tourists aboard the Royal Caribbean cruise ship, the Anaheim of the Seas, found dead after it docked at the old San Juan Pier. Authorities said the body showed no signs of violence, and seemingly they had died from natural causes. The men were identified as Joseph Ambrosi, a 62-year-old retiree, and William Allen Forsythe, a 55-year-old pharmacist. Both were traveling with their own wives. This was two separate cases, and they planned to stay in hotels in Puerto Rico. They died. Police say a Rhode Island man who streamed himself on Facebook Live, speeding and weaving in and out of traffic, was seriously injured when he crashed into a garbage truck and a concrete barrier, and that's not smart. Facebook, by the way, is working on it automatically flagging offensive material in live video streams, building a growing effort to use artificial intelligence to monitor content. Lauren Weinstein, our expert on the Internet. I guess that's a good thing, Lauren. What do you think?
Well, this is part of projects that all of the big social media companies are working on now to leverage artificial intelligence to try to deal with the onslaught of posts that have to be moderated one way or another, because they all have terms of service regarding abusive videos and violence and hate speech, you know, all these kinds of things, and to try to deal with them purely with humans is really impossible. So the idea here is you use artificial intelligence systems to do the first layer filtering, try to target the ones that you think are going to be problematic, then pass them along to human reviewers who will make the final decisions, because it's very hard for AI to say, you know, how do you know if something's a parody or if it's serious or if it's a news piece that mm-hmm. shows something? Those are things that are much harder right now for artificial intelligence to do. They're also trying to leverage these systems now to deal with something that's become a very big topic, especially post-election, which is fake news, the issue of
right.
fake news on websites and on social media. And I have a study that I've started, and listeners can help me with that if they'd care to. I'd really appreciate
sure.
it.
Sure.
I'm trying to collect information about fake news that people find on the Internet, either on Facebook or on websites, really anywhere, any kind of news that they think is fake. And if they will go to factsquad.com, that's FactSquad.com, factsquad.com, there's a form there, and it just asks questions about what they found and you know, what kinds of stories, what they think the situation is, where what the URL is for the fake stories. And I'm collecting those and trying to get a better handle on the scope of this. So anything that they see on that topic would be really appreciated.
Great. Thanks, Lauren. Appreciate that. In the next several weeks, we're going to be doing a show on cyberbullying. It's out of control. Sad story that CNN.com had today on a young girl killed. She killed herself because she was bullied too much. It's really out of control. Target, Walmart, and Kohl's stores each set some sort of online record over the five-day shopping extravaganza that ended with Cyber Monday, but blockbuster digital growth for many bricks-and-mortar retailers wasn't enough to close the gap with Amazon, which captured 31% of the sales online. Michael Mish Shedlock with us. That is unbelievable, Mish.
Pretty amazing stat there, George. I've got a blog out there on that right now on mishtalk.com. Second place, Best Buy, 7.4%. Target, third place at 4%. Wow. Walmart, 4%. Everyone else, all the 10th place, Home Depot, 1%. That's what we're talking about here. Listen to some of these numbers. 50 million Amazon Prime members, $99 a piece, $5 billion.
Unbelievable.
Isn't that something? 89% of Prime members made a purchase in October. 60% of total U.S. online sales growth in 2015, Amazon. 60% of the growth. But look at the market cap. $353 billion, share price $743, dividend zero, PE 170. You're paying a lot for this growth. They're delivering it.
Yeah, you really are. God, I remember the days, though, Mish, when Amazon was just selling books. Remember that?
Yeah, just books. Now it is the King Kong of all online gorillas. It's going to stay that way. How are these brick-and-mortar stores going to compete? I keep asking myself that. We keep putting up more and more Walmarts, Targets, Amazons, and they're losing share to Amazon.
I went by a mall today. I'm in the St. Louis area, Mish, and in the past, the parking lots were jammed. Jammed. Now, you've got a few cars parked in the rows close to the stores, and all the way back, the parking lot is empty. You could put in like 8 football fields out there. Wasn't a car to be seen.
I know. Think about this, George. You go buy something on Amazon because you've got this Prime membership. So you buy something for $3. You get free shipping. And you realize, oh, my gosh, I'm out of toothpaste. So you order toothpaste. You don't care because you're getting free shipping. So this is why Amazon, you know, can't make a big profit, but it's certainly killing the retailers, and people have the convenience out of their home, and it's going to keep growing, George.
You got it right, Mish. Thank you. Along the French-Swiss border is the Large Hadron Collider, CERN, we call it. What have they been doing there, and what happens? In a moment, we'll be talking with Josh Peck about CERN, parallel universes, and much more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Josh Peck with us, of course, an avid researcher of fringe topics, just like we are, a videographer at Skywatch TV, creator of The Sharpening Report, host of The Multiverse, and is the author of numerous books. We'll be talking about some of them in just a moment. Josh specializes in scientific studies such as quantum physics to explain the unusual, the paranormal, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Josh, looking forward to this.
Hey, George, I'm looking forward to this, too. It's a pleasure to meet you and talk with you, and appreciate you having me on the show.
You've been doing great work, my friend. How'd you get involved in all this?
Well, it was actually my wife. You know, I say that my wife is the smartest person I know. And
that's
actually,
a smart husband by saying that, by the way.
Yeah, it helps. But before we were married, when we were still dating, a lot of our date nights would be just her and I staying at home watching science programs like Nova or Discovery Channel or something like that. And then we got married 7 years later, and three kids later, we still have date nights like that. You know, and the kids love it too. But Christina, she was the one that really got me into this. And her and I have always kind of had a special bond because when we were dating, we had some strange paranormal experiences that we shared in together, so that kind of closed our made our bond even closer. But it also got us talking about how to explain some of these things. For example, I'll be real brief on this, but Christina had an encounter with a UFO, and so it was something that we talked about. And I always believed her. I've always been the kind of person, because I've had my own experiences, I've always been the kind of person that if somebody tells me of their paranormal encounter of some kind, I'm likely to believe them because I've been through it too. But in those discussions, it really got us on this path towards quantum physics. You know, when you're talking about a UFO, obviously high technology, that's going to come up. And so in our study, it's actually kind of funny because at first I wanted nothing to do with it. I thought quantum physics would be way over my head. I didn't think I, you know, would be able to even understand it, let alone get anything out of it. But through watching those shows, slowly but surely, and just from talking with Christina so much about it, I started to realize that quantum physics, it's not just for geniuses. It can be for anybody. And really, understanding it is more about understanding a different language than anything else. Because they almost, physicists and scientists almost speak a different language than we do. So it's more about translation than trying to get our heads around these impossible, you know, trying to understand these things. So once I realized that, I just started beginning the translation effort and wrote some books, and it started to fall together and make a lot of sense. And I realized that the big picture stuff is really for everybody. I mean, I'm a big picture kind of guy anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I put out a couple of books and started getting emails from people as young as 15 or even as old as 80 or 90 and saying that they enjoyed my books, they understood it just fine, and there was no real issues. So that really inspired me to kind of tackle the big kahuna with CERN.
Oh, yeah.
Understand what's going on there. And so my good friend Tom Horn.
Good guy. Good guy.
Great guy. Yeah, he's excellent. He and I got together to research CERN, the Large Hadron Collider, and find out what's really happening there from a scientific and from a paranormal point of view. And what we found out was surprising, so we put it together in our book, Abaddon Ascending.
There has always been talk, Josh, and I don't know if this was wild speculation, but when they were turning CERN on, some people were petrified that they were going to create little wormholes that would get to be big wormholes and literally suck Earth right into it.
Yes.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and that's actually a really good example of this this language translation problem. When a physicist says something like, well, there's a small possibility or a slight possibility this could happen, it's because they're speaking in extremely technical and literal terms. Usually when we say a small possibility, there's a small possibility I could get hit by a car today or something like
right.
that.
Right, but it could happen.
It could happen. But when they say it, and actually this is a good analogy I heard from a physicist, Sean Carroll, who I really like a lot. He's a great guy, a brilliant physicist. But he said when a physicist says something like slight chance, it would be like if I'm going to open a can of spaghetti sauce to put on spaghetti for dinner, there's a slight chance, there's a minute percentage of a chance that in that spaghetti sauce there might be some type of incurable disease that's going to spread all over the world and end humanity. But, you know, it's not likely to happen, but there's nothing stopping it from happening. But so, but we risk that anyway, even knowing that. So when they say that there's a small chance that a black hole, you know, might open or might stabilize, they're looking at it on those astronomical terms where they believe that the reward is worth the slight risk. So, you know, people can interpret that and you know however they want, but that's essentially what they're trying to say. So it's more really of a translation mm-hmm. problem than anything else.
Did they find the Higgs boson, the God particle, or not? Because yes. I've heard several stories.
Yes, they did. In 2012, that's when they, actually July 1st, 2012, they announced the discovery. But I think where a lot of the confusion comes from is how the media chooses to present the information.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I want to get into politics or anything, but I think just during this this election season, we've seen a lot of the mainstream media and how some of them operate, which is why I love alternative media and shows like yours that actually want to tackle the real stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. We want the truth out, Josh.
Amen. Yes, absolutely. And so what happened in 2012 was they felt, the media felt like they had to, well, and it was partly the physicists too, but again, physicists speak a slightly different language. So the media had to make that discovery sound exciting. You know, otherwise, why would people care? And that also helps CERN get funding and stuff like that. So so it's understandable why they might be motivated to do that. But in doing it, they didn't quite get the point of that discovery. So they did discover a particle called the Higgs boson. Which, I mean, it's a building block of reality. That's pretty interesting all by itself. But the real discovery, and I think this is why now people are saying, well, they didn't really discover it. And also calling it the God particle was a big media thing too. You know, to make it more popular, more palatable to the public and to get discussion going.
I mean, still, nobody knew what the heck it meant anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well, physicists did, but unfortunately, it was they had a difficult time trying to explain it to the media. But essentially, and to a certain point, physicists didn't even try. Sean Carroll actually talks about this in his book, Particle at the End of the Universe, which is an excellent book. But basically, they had to make it sound interesting, so they called it the God particle. But in reality, if they would have explained what that discovery actually meant, I think people would have been even more excited because there's a Higgs particle, a Higgs boson, that means there's this thing called a Higgs field, which is something that permeates all areas of space. And when we interact with the Higgs field, which we do every day, all the time, every second of every day, that's what gives us mass. That's what holds particles together, essentially. Without the Higgs field, the atoms in our body would never be able to combine and assimilate. Every particle would travel the speed of light, and there would be essentially no real reality. Now, that's exciting.
Yeah, it's different.
Yeah. It's definitely different. And I think if it was explained that way, it would be more truthful. And while not as sensational on the surface, I think it would have excited people a lot more and got people more interested in a field called quantum field theory, which is just basically reality is made of these fields, like the Higgs field.
Josh, we're going to take this break, but we're going to come back, and I want to ask you what the heck they're doing there at CERN, at the LHC, and you say that there is a difference there in the terminology. But what are they doing there? We'll find out next. Welcome back to Coast, Josh Peck with us, of course, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Josh, what are they doing there at CERN with this Large Hadron Collider? What are they doing?
Yeah, well, the official story, you know, and what I believe that most physicists there would accept is quite simply they just want to smash particles together, try to discover new particles and put together the pieces of the building blocks of reality. But
a lot of money for that.
Oh yeah, yeah, a lot of money, and they have a lot of funding too. The really interesting thing is, and they make no secret about this. This isn't like a conspiracy or anything. This is right on their own website. Part of what they want to do is open a portal, and they even use this language, open a portal to a higher dimension or parallel dimension,
Wow. Parallel
universe, and measure extra-dimensional space, but also communicate with any intelligences that might be inhabiting that space. And the crazy thing is, you know, even just a decade or maybe two decades ago, you wouldn't, I don't think you'd hear such a big scientific body say things like that in those terms. But they do, and physicists accept that's what they're
That's amazing, because I always thought, Josh, they spent billions of dollars for this collider.
Yeah.
They've got it tucked away there at the French-Swiss, you know, border. What are they doing there? They're not spending billions just to find the God particle.
Exactly.
There's something else, and you know what? You could be right on, literally creating a gateway to another universe.
Yeah, and one of the interesting things about that, too, since you brought up the location, it's an odd location, isn't it? I mean, on the border of France and Switzerland, that's where they decide to put this thing. But, interestingly enough, it was built over an ancient Roman city called Apollyacum, and in ancient times, the citizens of that city worshipped the god Apollo, who they believed lived in the bottomless pit or the abyss or Tartarus.
Huh.
There's a lot of words for it, but that's where they believed the bottomless pit was, right there in that city. So is it just coincidence that now CERN has built this Large Hadron Collider in this awkward, you know, on the border of two countries, this awkward location? And even when they were constructing it, they had to stop construction because they found ruins, ancient Roman ruins that they had to excavate so they can continue construction. So it's odd that they built it right over this place that's supposed to be the bottomless pit or the abyss where the god Apollo is said to be, and now they're saying that they want to create a portal or a gateway to another dimension and communicate with whatever's there.
It sort of reminds me of the movie Contact.
Yes.
When they built that huge apparatus for Jodie Foster, Ellie, to go through.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And that's essentially what they're trying to do. And another interesting thing is they want to use gravity to do this. And it's I always find it interesting, the parallel between when something happens in Hollywood, when something's talked about in Hollywood, and then shortly after, sometimes before, but a lot of times after, that idea becomes popularized in science. And I don't want to give away any spoilers in case somebody hasn't seen the movie, but the movie Interstellar, a big part of that was communication from a higher dimension using gravity. And as it turns out, CERN has been talking about that. Physicists have been talking about that for at least a decade, even in popular media. There was a documentary narrated by Brian Greene, a very famous,
mm-hmm.
and again, brilliant physicist, popular physicist, and he narrated this documentary in which they had other physicists on there talking about how they could use gravity to communicate with extra-dimensional entities.
So let's talk about parallel universes, these other dimensions. What do you think they are, Josh?
I think my personal, everything that I've looked at in quantum physics, I believe that reality as we know it, the three dimensions of space and one of time that we inhabit, is just a sliver of the real reality. You know, a lot of times we talk about ghosts and spirits and things, and we tend to think of them as kind of wispy or ethereal, you know, not really made of anything. But scientifically, in quantum physics, it should be the other way around. Actually, if there is extra-dimensional matter out there, it would be more solid than we are. We would be the ghosts, essentially. So what a parallel universe would be would just be another slice of a larger picture, or what we might call extra-dimensional matter. We could kind of think of it as like a stack of sheets of paper, and every sheet of paper is a universe. When you take a look back, though, all those universes, they stack up to make a three-dimensional figure, and that whole construct, the stack of paper, is the whole reality. So I think that we're just a small part of what's actually out there.
Okay, so the name of your book, Abaddon Ascending.
Yes.
To me, there's two definitions of Abaddon. One is Hebrew, which means a place of destruction.
Yep.
The other is, it's the name of an angel.
Yeah.
Which one is it for you?
Well, for me, it's a little of both, and that's kind of why we went with that title. Because not only are they talking about this bottomless pit, which has connection, you know, it's not exactly the same, but it has connections to this eternal abode of the damned, but also it's a fallen angel who's connected directly with Apollo. I mean, there's ancient scriptures that connect Abaddon directly with an entity called Apollyon, which in the Greek would be Apollo. So that's why we decided to call it Abaddon Ascending, because if they do create this portal, and if they do communicate with somebody, and if it is Apollo, and if that is who they're trying to get a hold of, and in a sense Apollo comes through this thing, then in a sense Abaddon would be ascending. And I probably should mention too that right now Skywatch TV is doing something unprecedented. They're if people are interested in getting the book anyway, they can go to skywatchtv.com and actually get $400 worth of other materials along with this book, and it's only for a limited time. That's the only reason I'm bringing it up now, because it's such a limited time. So if people are interested, they can go to skywatchtv.com.
Right. Small window.
Small, yep.
Okay. So these other dimensions,
yes,
that could be there, and I'm beginning to believe they are.
Me too.
Are they inhabited by other beings, people doing, I mean, are they our alter egos? There, maybe you're interviewing me in another parallel universe. Is it the same? What do you think's out there?
You know, it could be that. That's many worlds interpretation says that for every choice that we make, there's an alternate version of ourselves out there who makes a different choice. So that's one possibility. What I tend to look at, and what other physicists are looking at too, is the possibility that now in many worlds, that's just essentially other pieces of paper in the stack. Physicists are looking at the whole stack, you know, the whole stack of paper, and that's what's referred to as extra-dimensional entities. Interestingly enough, not only do physicists believe this and talk about it frequently, but this came out in the Podesta WikiLeaks emails. And Tom Horn and I have been doing extensive research into these emails, and we're cataloging them and keeping close track of them. But for those not familiar, John Podesta, he was the former chairman of Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, chief of staff to Bill Clinton, counselor to Barack Obama. Well, in these WikiLeaks emails, Podesta was in contact with an individual named Edgar Mitchell, and he was the
Apollo 14, God rest his soul. Great guy. We knew him well.
Yeah, definitely. Sixth man on the moon, very accomplished. Well, so in these emails, he was pushing with Podesta for meetings concerning official disclosure. But the interesting thing is the language that was used. These entities, or whatever we might want to call them, they were described as nonviolent extraterrestrial intelligences that come from a contiguous universe, meaning not our three dimensions of space and one of time, not our physical universe. So we're talking about something that's beyond aliens on another planet. This is something that's from a parallel universe or maybe even a higher dimension. And also, the other point that they talked about often was this idea that these beings want to bring us zero-point energy, which, for those not familiar with that, that's basically the energy that holds reality together, that actually reality is made of. Quantum field theory even even says things like that. So it's really interesting that it's even being talked about in terms of official disclosure, that when disclosure happens, it might not be just, well, you know, we know that there are aliens on other planets. That might be a piece of it, but it might also be we know parallel universes, we know higher dimensions, and we know that there are intelligences there that we're in contact with. So it's pretty mind-blowing stuff.
It really is, and it makes a lot of sense, again, when you start thinking about what they built and why they built it. There's something else. Now, here's the big question, Josh. Why don't they want us to know about it? Why don't they come out and say, look, we're trying to find parallel universes, other dimensions, we're trying to communicate with... It's our pathway. It's our gateway.
You know, and in a sense, I wish that they would. I think a lot of it has to do with power control, but I think that we're going through a period right now of soft disclosure, because especially the past 5 or 10 years, these physicists and people who are conducting these experiments, they haven't really made a big secret about what they're trying to do. Actually, Sergio Bertolucci, who's the director for research and scientific computing at CERN, he's quoted as saying, we plan to open a portal into an extra dimension. Out of this door might come something unknown. So there are actual official plans that are open to the public stating that they want to measure parallel or higher dimensions. So I think right now what's happening is we're going through a time of soft disclosure where we're, in a sense, being tested to see if we can handle the information and what we would do with it. That might be part of it, but I think part of it, too, is once that happens, once disclosure happens, there's no going back. And I think that the ones that...
Do you think it will happen? Do you think a disclosure will happen?
Eventually, yeah. I believe it will. I think that it's on the track now. I think even when Podesta was, when John Podesta was in the Obama administration, and it was coming to an end, he even tweeted out that his biggest failure was that he couldn't convince Obama to go ahead with official disclosure. So I think we're right on the door. I think it could happen really at any time.
It's just amazing to try to think of what these other universes could be like.
Oh, I know. It's definitely fun to think about, and especially knowing that because we have a limited three-spatial dimensional, and one of time perception, whatever's out there, we could never fully grasp, which to me, I think kind of keeps the interest alive anyway. But it's definitely spawned a lot of conversations between my wife and I.
Josh, let's talk also about some of the other work you've been doing. You've been looking at consciousness as well. Tell me what you're exploring there.
Oh, yeah. This is something that's really fascinating to me, because right now physicists admit that they don't have like a really good working model of what consciousness actually is. I mean, and of course nobody does. If we tried to explain what consciousness is, we might say, well, it's the state of being self-aware. But beyond that, what does that really mean? What is it? So physicists are exploring this this theory, and there's not a really good explanation that they all agree on, but there are candidates. And one of them is called quantum brain dynamics. But basically what this says, like how mass is mass, we have mass because we interact with the Higgs field. There's this idea that maybe we have consciousness because we interact with a consciousness field, which actually has a name. They call it the cortical field. It's hypothetical. Most physicists don't take this theory seriously. But the interesting thing is, if consciousness is a product of interacting with a field, then that would mean there would be a consciousness particle, which also has a hypothetical name. They call it a corticon. So corticons would exist, meaning that they would be able to create those at CERN and at other particle accelerators, the LHC. There's other particle accelerators in the world too. But they would essentially be able to create those. So that brings up an interesting question: if this quantum brain dynamics thing is true, if that's what consciousness is, and they create consciousness particles, would that be a true consciousness? Would it be an artificial intelligence? Would it be something else? And so those are possibilities that we explore in the book as well. What might that mean as technology advances?
What could it mean?
Well, again, it depends on who's in power and how they choose to use it. It could actually be something that could be helpful, especially at CERN. They have a lot of data to process, and they're looking to develop artificial intelligence to be able to process all this data because it's too much for human beings to do. So in that sense, it could be helpful. But if they're able to manipulate corticons and the cortical field, and you get that power in the wrong hands, essentially, somebody with that technology could wipe out somebody's consciousness and replace it with a new consciousness. So, I mean, there's all sorts of dark areas that type of technology could lead to. Now, I'm optimistic. I would hope that wouldn't happen, but the possibility is still there. So, it really all depends on who is wielding the technology, who's wielding the power, and what they decide to do with it.
Is this collider the beginning of end times?
It could be. It could be the beginning of end times, or it could be the beginning of us understanding how our reality actually works and what nature really is. And that's something that we talk about in the book too. We don't really take a hard stance on CERN or the LHC, because like all technology, you have good things come out of it and bad things, like the internet. You know, there's a lot of great things that come
exactly
from the internet. But there's a lot of bad things too. So we look at quantum technology in the same way. It really all depends. I believe quantum technology, because it is based on the very fabric of reality, it does have the potential to become the catalyst of the end times. But it might not be. It could also be used to set us more free than we've ever been. So a lot of it is a wait and see kind of deal, but I think that's why we need to be informed of this stuff now, and why we should take time now to look into it so that we have a say in what happens. Otherwise, if we don't do that, then those in power, they have no accountability, and they can, you know, they can feel free to do whatever they want, you know. And I feel that it's our world too. You know, we have to live here too. We should have a say in what happens in it.
Might this collider be a time traveling machine?
You know, that's really interesting too, and that kind of gets into the topic of quantum computing, which is another thing that they're looking at there to help process all this data. As far as right now, the particle collider itself doesn't seem to have that capability yet, but they are doing different upgrades. They're implementing new devices. But if they start implementing quantum computing, that actually does have the capability to not only traverse dimensions, but traverse time as well. Actually, quantum computing uses something that's called a closed time-like loop, which is kind of a fancy way of saying it's a really regulated time travel. But it's all possible in the physics and in the math. And actually, there is a quantum computer that exists now built by Google. It's called the D-Wave. And that operates a little bit differently, but it's on the way to where they want it to be, where it's utilizing things like quantum entanglement, which is the mysterious ability for two particles to communicate with one another faster than the speed of light, which is supposed to be physically impossible, but somehow these particles can do it. So they want to implement that in computers. They know how to do it, and in some ways, that technology already exists today.
All right, we're going to come back and take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.